Welcome back, everyone, to the Language and Behavior Podcast. This is episode 43, and I am with the talented Charlie Peck. And Charlie, I was just thinking as that intro was going on, I've been viewing that quite a bit because I've been working through all of the videos from the School Behavior Solutions Summit, and we're going to have those videos actually uploaded today. So I know that we're going to be sending out day two here soon, but is there any way that if someone's listening right now and they want to get all of that content from 22 different speakers, is there a way for them to still get that?
There is, because this happens every single time we run a summit and people want those extra resources. They want the replay. So yes, I always leave it on my website. So if you all go to thrivingeducator.org, at the very top there, it says to sign up for the summit. Now the summit did happen, but you're going to get all the recordings and the resources. So absolutely check it out and go there and sign up.
Awesome. Well, so great to see you. I'm going to see you here very, very soon in person. So if anyone is following us on social media, make sure you do that, because you're going to see the two of us in the same place. Once again, I love seeing you in person and can't wait to be in sunny Florida. But with that, Charlie, I know we've been working with a lot of different schools, school leaders, and something continuously comes up. So I want to throw this scenario at you. It's actually kind of a case study as we are coaching administrators and teachers through very similar things. So as we talked about in the past, obviously the school year, that honeymoon period doesn't exist anymore. It is over. Kids are starting to get comfortable. We also know that academics is increasing, which is causing more stress, more of a mental load for them. And so when a student is dysregulated in the classroom, a lot of times what's occurring is that they are calling the administrator to come to solve the issue. One of the things specifically in this case study is that the student, when they see the principal, is actually amping up by being non-compliant, shutting down, walking away, not doing anything really outside of just not wanting to engage at all with the principal. But I also think there's this kind of viewpoint of, well, this is the person that is giving discipline. This means I'm in trouble. And so curious, you know, with that noncompliance and in the situation, what are your thoughts as far as maybe the teacher working through this or a leader working through this?
Yeah. So anytime I hear compliance, I just always tell myself there's more to the story. What's going on there? Does the kid have an IEP? Does the kid have some diagnosis? Did the kid have their basic needs met that day? I mean, what has happened here? And so oftentimes when it's around a certain subject, it's that, like if it's math, for example, that they're not good at math or this part of math, and they're shutting down because they're thinking, oh my gosh, I can't do this. That happens typically a lot with math, actually. Sorry, math. Sorry. Or writing essays. Sorry, English. But it's pretty common.
But pretty common.
It is. All right. Because they're tough and it takes a lot of thinking, especially if a kid who has ADHD and having to use the executive functions and their working memory, which is impaired. I mean, that's tough stuff. So I always say this. First of all, what is the trigger? What is the thing that is activating their nervous system? So try to notice that they're activated in the first place. When we know our kids, when we know our students, we notice that there's a shift. There's a shift in energy. There's a shift in tone. There's a shift in body language. There's a shift of like, I'm holding onto my pen or pencil or working or not. I put everything down. So there's shifts that we get to know our kids. And so I always say this, just pay attention to that. And then the next piece would be to check in. What's going on? So, hey, I noticed that. And I always say, always use the language of something that you noticed, because that's the truth. There's not a right or wrong there. I noticed that you put your pencil down when we were trying to do that math worksheet. Tell me about that. So I keep it simple like that. And then I would also just kind of break it down. So let's say that they are stressed with math. Well, if it looks really big to them, and a lot of times kids will be like, I don't know. And that's true. They don't always know. So we can then break things down much further. What we need in kids is to have them calm. And that might be breathing or just knowing, like that talk, that external stimulus coming from you saying, you know what, let's break this down because it seems like it might be overwhelming. Let's just try part A of part one or the first sentence, something like that. And the other thing is, regulate with them. That's really good. And so when your tone is calm, when you get down to their level, when you're slow, no matter what they are doing, that's always the best way to approach it. That's always like the earliest sign, but I'm going to just stay there. I haven't gotten to the later part and I haven't even gotten any further from that piece, but I want to hear from you.
Yeah. I think I'll speak to the leader component of it is, you know, obviously the student has a relationship probably with somebody on that campus. And so if it's something that is a low level infraction, and I've seen this so many times, and I've tried to coach so many principals and administrators over my years, is that, you know, sometimes as the adult, we actually make things worse. We actually amplify the behaviors based on our presence or the way that we're interacting with them. And just some of the misconceptions, I think, like, for instance, you know, we don't have to have the student in our office to have that conversation. We don't have to have them in the principal's office to provide consequences. And I've seen so many times a power struggle. And if we're doing the power struggle, we've already lost. Like, let's think through this as far as what's the main goal. The first goal, obviously, is to regulate the student. Because if you don't have them regulated, then nothing is going to occur as far as the conversation, the teach piece, or providing a consequence. And then what we're doing is we're essentially just creating this conveyor belt of punishment until we get compliance. And so, especially an elementary kid, a lot of times they don't understand their emotions. They don't understand what's triggered them. They just know that they're at a heightened state and some need is not there. And so I would just look as if you're a teacher and you need support with a student, I get that. It's hard, right? You've got 25 to 30 kids with you, especially at the elementary level. It's hard. So you need to bring someone in, but I would just look at the list of the folks that you are asking for and really making sure that the person that's going to be assisting is either taking your class like a push-in where you can have that conversation with the child, which is probably better, or the person that's actually trying to regulate the child has the skills necessary for that to go smoothly. Otherwise, we're just amplifying everything where the kid is not going to be back in class and most likely getting a punishment that really isn't representing the first behavior that kind of started that triggered process.
Yeah. And notice, it's funny you say that, because notice that when I was talking about the initial problem of compliance, I didn't pull that kid out of the classroom. Yeah. I was having the teacher stay with the student and notice before it got too big. This is not a blame game for teachers. I know what it's like in the classroom. I know it's not always perfect that way, and you might catch that, and you might have tried those strategies. So that's what Josh is saying about the next piece here. So the next piece could be the push-in model, where we have that list of people who we call upon to say, listen, could you come into my classroom so that I can step outside with this kid? Because I want to be the one building that relationship and making sure that I help regulate him or can co-regulate with him or her, because I want them to stay with me in this classroom. So that is the kind of thing that we need to try. So it is about the teacher, and then it is about the leadership piece. And I will say, all this works so much better is if we have the proper communication. It's already well established ahead of time. It's been working. The problems that come up, they're all ironed out. And then we're willing to talk about it. So you said an important word too, Josh. You said consequence. Consequence is not the punishment necessarily, yeah, right? Consequence is the outcome. And that can look a lot of different ways. So again, any other thoughts as I say this?
Yeah, Charlie, I think the idea is always to be proactive, right? And I think that's the coaching piece with the teachers that we try to provide. And we've done this quite a bit in our book, right? The Language of Behavior, as far as like considering your environment, considering some of the behaviors and making sure that we're regulating prior to them getting to a bigger behavior that's going to require support from an administrator. And I will just say this too, and I think this is another misconception I've heard both teachers and administrators say, it is just like, well, I don't want this behavior to occur because I don't want other students to do the exact same behavior. And I would just kind of push back on that, because you had brought in a lot of like great perspective as far as like, you know, do they have an IEP? Do they have, you know, some trauma in their life based on their brain development as far as what's going on? But like, if we look at our student body and you look at your class, typically we're looking at like a 95 to 98% rate of students going in every day to school, making great decisions, learning and doing what are the expectations. And so often, you know, that 5 to 10% of the students that are having these behaviors that are potentially every day or often kind of tint our lens as to thinking that, you know, this is the majority versus the minority of behaviors. And what I would say is most kids understand that if a kid is dysregulated and have abnormal behaviors that potentially are intense, they also know like that's not appropriate. That's not what should be occurring. I just want to kind of push back on that, because I've heard so many educators say that and it's not true. I can think of examples of kids like cussing out in the hallway or give me the double bird or whatever. And all the middle school kids that walked by looked at the child as if they were an alien. Like, this is such odd, weird behavior. And guess what? That one kid did it, but the other 1,200, they didn't see that and then do the exact same behavior as what they just witnessed, because that's not the norm. They know that that student has something else going on in their life. They're not going to repeat the behavior just because they saw it.
Yeah, that's a great point too. Because it really is like that one or two, sometimes three, or that small group of kids in a classroom or teenagers in a classroom, that when you change the seating plan or you split them up in the next class, the dynamics change. We all know that in education. And I'm not saying there are teachers who have a lot of behaviors in some classes. I've heard of that too. Or they'll say, gosh, I have 12 IEPs. And that's a whole nother conversation. I have some thoughts about that. That's separate from this conversation.
we'll do that in another episode.
Well, there's so much judgment right in that statement, right? That just doesn't feel good. Okay, so as far as this one goes, I think the big picture is this. I think that if we always go back to the language of behavior, what is the kid trying to communicate to us? If they're not trying explicitly to communicate a need that's not met, how can we use those decoding skills to try to make sense of it so that we can support them? So we can give them their needs now. And also, if you are frustrated as the adult, if this is recurring, if it's something that we haven't done well, we haven't dealt with well yet, or it hasn't mitigated yet, then meet your own needs. Make sure you're not stressing out, because that's legit too. We understand that you're overwhelmed. Sometimes you don't feel supported. Sometimes you just don't know what to do. Or you feel like you've tried everything and it's not working. And that's why we like using the first tenet, is we like to say, consider your environment. Let's start there. Let's go back to those tools that we use. Let's go back to the relationship inventory, the environment inventory. Let's start there. Let's go way back to that. Let's pull it out with the kid and meet with the kid and have them have some agency here. And then pull them in as a part of the solution. But let's be proactive. Let's be proactive. So if there's a pattern, let's identify the pattern. Let some behavior specialists come in if necessary, but I don't think it always needs to get there. I think we can ask some questions first and decode what that behavior is, like what's happening there and what's happening with us. So that's kind of big picture. The punishment skips all of this. The punishment teaches fear. The punishment teaches you're bad. Now, there's so much, but for this situation, this is a case study that we talked about. Is this, to me, says the punishment was teaching that kid that it's not about your need. It just, you need to get out of my classroom, or your dysregulation is being ignored. We're teaching fear. So again, there's probably a lot more to this that we could ask about, but that's why my thoughts are so jumbled right now, because so much is jumping in there about what if.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good stopping point for this case study. Again, if anyone has any questions or you want us to go further, you know, we have a form in the show notes for you. So make sure you're clicking on that. And if you have something specific like this scenario that you want us to kind of break down for you, please make sure you're using that form to let us know. Charlie, are you ready for Behind the Banter?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. All right. So we talked about a couple episodes, a strategy that someone was using that was not helping, which was putting a kid out in the hallway. And so I want to know, what is a behavior strategy you once believed was going to solve the situation, but later you ditched it?
Yelling. I did. I thought I had to assert authority by yelling. It was an actual strategy. It's terrible, but I didn't know. You don't know what you don't know. So I definitely ditched that pretty quickly in my teaching career early on.
For sure.
What about you?
Oh, goodness. There's a lot. Definitely as an administrator too, just like the role of ISS, OSS, getting police involved on certain situations. Like I think I will say I had a lot of like crazy situations over a decade. So you can imagine what those look like. But I think, and this is why we wrote the book, right? Is like this perspective of like what's really going to get at the heart and to teach the students how to behave in the future. And our kids make such crucial decisions sometimes, but the way that we handle as an adult and the punishment to what we're talking about that you place can really steer a kid in a lot of different directions. And I saw a lot of power in that. And so the way that I handle things, because I could throw a kid in ISS, get the parent call, get them situated in probably 10 minutes. I could do it like super fast, but in the grand scheme of things, is that really going to teach the appropriate thing and get them back in the educational environment as a better person, as a better student? And yeah, I think all of that discipline, I just kind of learned that I had a lot more leeway, a lot more power, a lot more permission to be creative in all of that. So I would agree too. Yelling is probably one that I would also take out of my tool belt.
Yeah. I remember a teacher when I first started teaching my first year, she said, I never have to yell at my kids. I never do. And I remember being shocked. That's just how much we need to do in our teacher prep programs. Like that's how much we need to talk about this.
There's an interesting book, Tony Dungy, the NFL coach who won a Super Bowl. He wrote a biography, and in it, he talks about how coaching NFL, and you know how big an NFL roster is, it's huge. But in the locker room, he wouldn't yell. He would just set his tone at a very low level. And he said it was amazing to watch grown men that would match that level and try that as a teacher, like just try and keep a low tone and see how the class responds to that. And it's pretty powerful to see how the kids will match that. So if you're yelling to get on top of, it really is enhancing that more so than modeling a lower tone and having them match that.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's pretty incredible. All right, so let's talk through bulk orders, Charlie, because it's exciting. We just had another administrator reach out to us, and they're going to be doing the study guide also. So will you just share out, you know, if someone's looking for a resource to maybe do a book study with their staff to get some of these strategies, what they're going to get with a free study guide?
Yeah, they will. And I will prelude this with somebody reaching out to me who's an assistant principal and said, our office referrals are just so high right now and teachers are overwhelmed. Yeah. They don't know what to do. I want to better equip them. What should we do? And I want it to be trauma informed. So I said, listen, if you're doing a book study, we've got a great free book study kit. It's got all the worksheets in there. It's got all the guiding questions. It's got emails that you can just copy and paste to invite them and to remind them for every single session. And so it's a whole facilitator guide. It gives you prompts and everything for discussion questions. And if you want to get a copy of that, you could either, are you putting the link up? Yeah. You could go right there and you could get everything. Sorry, I had to prompt you. I want to make sure people see it. And also, if you're just listening and you're not having a visual here, you can just go to thrivingeducator.org/books, because I have it listed there. Not only do I have the book study link there, you can get that for free, but then you can do a bulk book order and you can get a discount from Connect Ed Publishing. So there's just so much you can do, but we want to make this easy for you. We want to give you solutions. All that we've talked about today and all that we talk about in our podcast, there are solutions. It's never a perfect solution, but sometimes it's really simple. And sometimes it takes a little bit more figuring, but we know you can do this. So we've got all the resources for you.
For sure. I know that a lot of people are going to be listening to this and shaking their head like, yes, I've been in this scenario, seen this happen. Maybe it's even happened multiple times this school year already, now that we're a month in. So we're here for you. Obviously, we talked last time about keynotes and workshops. We also have a cohort system for districts, but then also we've got the book. So there's a lot of ways that we're here to support you, but just know that you can't do this alone. So if you don't have folks on your campus that you feel comfortable with and you want to reach out to Charlie and I, our websites are in the show notes. So please reach out. We love coaching folks through many, many different scenarios. That's what we do. And so if we can help you in any way, please let us know. Of course, if you want to send in a question for a future episode, we have a bit.ly/LOB questions that also is in the show notes. Click on that. Just fill it out. You can put your name on there, or you don't have to. You can be anonymous. Some folks feel like they don't want to put their name attached to something, and we get that. So we want to make sure that you feel safe in asking questions, but we love having that feedback so that way we know what's going on in your world and we can support you where you are. Last thing I'll say, Charlie, is that our 5-star rating is continuously coming in on Amazon. So if you are listening, you have the book, you feel like it was a great resource for you, and you would like to share that out with others, we'd love for you to jump on Amazon, give us a wonderful review and rating. We would be really appreciative of that, because that lets other folks know that it's a resource that they can grab and help them in their classroom or on the campus. With that, Charlie, is there any last words for this episode?
Yes, I will say to leaders, at your next staff PD session or just your next staff meeting, Give a scenario that's common to a staff member that's going on in their classroom and do a chain analysis of it. Just analyze what happened right before that kid starts shifting. And what did we do typically to address that? What could we do different? What part of that chain could we have done earlier to intervene that might have had a much better outcome?
Wonderful. All right. I hope everyone has a fantastic week. Again, if you need anything, Charlie and I are here for you. And once again, we'll see you again very, very soon. And Charlie, I will see you in person very, very soon.
Yes. Can't wait.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.